8. The Order in the Dark. In the mountain, the wind sings through odd angles. It has always been a sacred space. In the oldest of all times, when men were mere figures with spears in the great landscape, tracking ibex and deer through the foothills, the mountain whispered, and some men put down their spears and left their game trails and ascended, against all common sense, to penetrate the darkness of its worming caves and crystal-threaded tunnels. They were the shamans, and to them the mountain granted the first insights of otherness. Their rituals were ancient before the emperor was born, and the mountain is why the palace was raised in this high remote place. As with all the rest of Terra, the Emperor refashioned the mountain to suit his needs. Tunnels of steel and ceramite replaced the ancient cave systems, and heat-bored shafts replaced carnate flues and chimneys. Cavities of intricate and exact geometric design were cut inside the rock surrounding the great chamber, in whose gleaming spherical space was raised the silver and oromite chancel tiers of the astropaths. Great machineries of secret design were set deep in the rock range, their inlaid conduits aligned to enhance and amplify the natural wonder of the resonating quartz and kyrosite. The mountain's natural sonority was harnessed by rational science and industrialized by etheric technology, and its eternal whispers were weaponized into a blinding scream. Yoked to the service of the youthful Imperium, the mountain forgot all of its old names, some already half lost or cancelled into myth, and became the Astronomican. It became the light of all worlds, the inescapable radiance of mankind's supremacy, and the visible expression of the Emperor's guidance. It mutters to itself still. Even now the light is out, the choirs butchered and the precious apparatus broken and defaced, it mutters still. The brethren leaders of the Caliban formation leave Versago's body in an undercroft, in the care of Bedisman serfs, and withdraw to an amplifier subvault deep beneath the great chamber where they can be alone. The vault, heat-finished and squared off, is nevertheless a remnant of the original caverns. It smells of cold, and its walls glimmer with the mineral traces of quartz and lustrous anthospar. There is no echo, none at all, despite the emptiness. As they speak, sparks of light, cinnabar and violet, dart across the crystal veins as though triggered by certain words.
"I do not understand you," says Carthaeus. "We silenced Versago because he pledged to Corswain's side. Yet now you do the same."
"I do," says Zahariel.
"And so must you."
"Without demur."
"If we are to go along with him," snaps Carthaeus, "why kill Versago? His death becomes meaningless."
"His death had meaning for him," Zahariel replies. "It showed him he had gone too far. He had spoken too openly. It showed him we Mystai will not tolerate those who break our confidences. I said what I said to Corswain to protect the rest of us."
"Protect how?" asked Tandarian.
Zahariel, a noted warrior long before he came to Corswain's side, stares at the three of them. He can feel their stubborn disapproval.
"We can't hide forever," he says. "Versago knew that. He had become too enamoured of Corswain, considered him a brother. I am certain he was close to unburdening himself and telling Corswain of the Order, of what the Order represents. For that alone he died. The Mystai tradition must guard itself completely, and I think the sight of what we found here, the demon that had made this place its nest, troubled him greatly. I believe it made him doubt that immaterial powers can ever be subdued to our will. Such was his trust in Corswain, Versago was close to speaking out.
He turns and stares at the dim rock wall, where once men limned Dymarks with their hands to design the future.
Corswain is a fine leader, he mutters, almost to himself. That cannot be denied. I admire him. I see why Visago softened in his bearing towards him. If any can lead us out of this, it is Corswain. For we are in this now, my brothers, to the hilt. We have come to Terra, into the mouth of hell, and our side has been chosen for us. If we are to live, and the order to continue, we must commit.
Has our side been chosen? Asrodale asks. Zahariel seizes him by the throat and squeezes. Asrodale sinks slowly to his knees. The other two look on aghast.
You saw what was here, brother, Zahariel hisses. You saw what Visago saw. Have you no wits? It was a thing of chaos, raw and terrible. I have no doubt its ilk has made slaves of all the so-called traitors, aye, even the dread Lupercal. Did you somehow mistake it for the spirit of Caliban to which we vow fealty?
No,
Asrodale gasps.
No, indeed. The spirit that guides us is a pure thing of the immaterial realm, the circle serpent from which flows the wisdom of the Mistai. We are sons of Caliban,
sons of Luther. We will know no master, not any who command from the gilded throne of Terra, not Lupercal, not the Emperor. That is our side in this.
Let him be, says Tandarion.
Yes, fine words, brother, says Carthius. But in practice as worthless as dung. This is wartime, and a side must be chosen.
Zahariel releases his grip, and Asrodale rocks forward, gasping.
Of course it must, says Zahariel, staring at Carthius.
Do you believe you have a choice? Would you side with the others against Corswain? Would you side with the Emperor's children and the world-eaters and the insane sons of Horus?
Our side is chosen for us, and it was chosen from the moment we set forth under Corswain's banner. We fight for ourselves, not for traitor or loyalist cause, but for Caliban. And that means casting our lot in with the side that will serve us best. Brothers, the loyal alignment must win this war, or all is lost. So we must help them. Visago was on the brink of saying too much, so he took his words away. But we must complete Visago's work. Make this beacon shine. Win this war. Then our destiny will be ours to shape again.
And when all is done?
Asks Carthius.
Consider the gains we could make, Zahariel says to Carthius. If Corswain emerges victorious from this bloodshed, and his victory is achieved with our aid, we will have him in certitude. He will value us and honour us.
And we can turn him to our advantage, asks Tandarion.
He grins at the notion, a wolf scenting prey.
I think so, says Zahariel.
Sparklights flicker in the rock wall, mimicking his cadence.
Turn him, or use him. If the lion is dead, Corswain will be lord of the first when this is over, and we will have his ear. If the lion lives, then we will have influence over his successor.
The brute lion's been gone too long. The first looks to Corswain, for he has been steadfast and present.
The lion would find he has few friends here, and none on Caliban. So, we will serve Lord Seneschal Corswain. To the death, if necessary. We will become invaluable allies that he can never renounce. Brothers, has he not already made us librarians? So we may practice openly?
They nod.
Then we will build on that and cement that trust. Suitably visited to protect its identity, the Order will stand forward and prove its worth to him.
He pauses and removes something from the satchel under his robe.
You
go that far?
Asks Carthias, amazed. Yes, brother. Corswain must understand the honour he is receiving. We must impress him by our deeds and by our appearance. Though not of the Order, he is of Caliban, after all. He must be made to feel the weight of tradition and the old line upon him, and marvel that he can be worthy of such prestige. When the time comes, I will wear the face I wore when we came to Visago. For him, that face was a punishment. For Corswain, it will be an accolade.
You would dare,
Azradale growls, rising back to his feet. I dare indeed, says Zahariel, with the blessing and permission of Lord Luther. A face is a face and a mask is a mask, and the meanings and significances are ours to employ. Lord Seneschal Corswain will be served by 4 loyal librarians. And by something else. He can tell they all have their doubts, but then they appreciate so much less than him. Though Mystai, they have not yet ascended to his level of enlightenment. He reads their misgivings and gently steers them with a deft psionic touch. His power is low and silent, but inexorably erosive, like a glacier or a mature river. It firmly alters the course of the other minds it touches. He intends to work on Corswain in the same way. Bring those who are reluctant round to the right way of thinking, without them ever realizing they have been subject to persuasion. One by one they nod in agreement, even Azradale. Zahariel offers them his hand. There has never been a war like this, brothers, says Zahariel. So there has never been a moment like this. The Order can turn this disaster to its great advantage.
The Grammaries of Ouroboros will instruct us in the repair of these devices, says Carthias, almost eager suddenly. The law of the triumvirate engines can be applied, if we are careful and circumspect.
That was Visago's plan, says Zahariel. You have that law by rote?
Since boyhood,
Carthias replies. For they have all been tutored by the Mystai teachers, and each had committed certain texts to memory.
The bestiaries of the Great Hunt will serve us too, says Tandarion, and I hold those by recollection, each verse, each engram. Through them we can channel etheric force.
Zahariel nods.
Then we are agreed? Are we not, brother?
Azradale glares, then joins his hands with the others. Sparks flash around the rock seams of the walls like angry fireflies.
We are, Azradale says. In my nonage, I was charged to learn the chanson of Mamanesi. I can recite it without flaw. Its charms and bindings will reinforce the engrams of the bestiaries.
Then we must work, says Zahariel. But we must work swiftly, for chaos is coming to claim this mountain back.
How do you know?
Asked Carthias.
Look at the walls, my brothers, says Zahariel. Look at the signs, the marks that flash and resonate, and read them well. The future is writ before our eyes. Chaos is coming hence to harrow us, and its name is Typhus.